We had some discussion with Jackson and Mason about historical areas of the Bible, which was very interesting, and they motivated, even as we were sitting there talking about it last night, motivated the subject for this sermon. I guess we'd say this sermon is topical, and we will look at it from one end of the Bible to the other end of the Bible. We'll be looking in the book of Revelation, and even into the part of the book of Revelation that goes beyond the time period that we're living in now to a time period that we can scarcely conceive of or understand at all. And then it goes back to where this all started. So I'm going to be trying to balance the whole Bible between the book of Revelation and the book of Genesis. It's kind of an interesting thing that the two of them relate together. In the introductory part of the sermon, I thought about an area of study that we in our university systems are going into quite a bit now. We didn't probably 100 years ago do any of this kind of study, but now with what's happened to society and with the industrialization of the world, we do this quite a lot now. And that area is city planning. We find probably at Cornell University, and a lot of the colleges will, about cities should develop. There'll be college degrees for and PhD degrees in the area. It goes into the study of city planning, goes into all related to the law, all kinds of things related to the physical layout of the streets and roads of a city. In law, there's a big section, I'm sure, that's involved with environmental law. You know, when you're putting together a city, it would be good if it functioned well environmentally. And so there are all kinds of applications, all kinds of things that relate to it. And this was not one of the things that I remember from when I was in civics class in 1959, we studied how the city of Atlanta grew up. And, of course, I was living in Atlanta at that time. And at the time, there were railroads into Georgia and another railroad being built from Savannah to the north. And those two railroads were going to intersect. Nobody knew where they were going to intersect, but everybody thought that wherever they did, it was going to be a city. And so, of planning and laying out a city. And they planned and laid out the city of Griffin, Georgia. Griffin, Georgia is about 40 miles south of Atlanta. Determined that this is probably where the river, and it was such a nice, perfect place for a city anyway. They went ahead, laid out this Griffin. There was a tavern, and there were five residents who lived kind of near that tavern. And they all would come to the tavern and walk home. And the directions they took in walking home became the five major streets in Atlanta. Not all of that cogent. Weren't all that straight. And one of the original five residents was named Whitehall. Peters. He and Peters walked along to a certain point to his house. That was the end of Whitehall Street, but you kept on going, and it was Peter Street because That's how it happened. And then on past Peter Street was Lee Street. And so you had all of these unplanned things. About the only thing that the city of Griffin is known for these days is the Dwarf Diner and Chick-fil-A. The founder of the Dwarf Diner, whose name was Truett Cathy, lived in Griffin, started Chick-fil-A there in his little, he had this little diner he called the Dwarf Diner, and he started fixing chicken sandwiches there, and it grew into Chick-fil-A, which is now a large nationwide chain. But that's about all Griffin is known for anymore. It was a perfect place for a city. It was perfectly laid out, but a mistake was made in that the wrong location was chosen. And all of the effort went for naught. And in the meantime, the place that wasn't at all appropriate for having a city, and which wasn't laid out at all, just happened, and it's a mass confusion as far as the streets there are concerned to this day. Atlanta is what we have. No city planning there at all. Why do I bring this up? Because God has planned a city. We read about that in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 8. It says there in Hebrews 11 and verse 8, Abraham, by faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place where he should after receive for an inheritance, you know, that might tie in a little bit with you for the sermonette. He was going to be given an inheritance by God. He was told to do something, and he had to obey God. So he obeyed God, did what he was supposed to do, and he now has an inheritance. Not only he himself, but his children also. And here's the thing about the double portion. Who gets the double portion? Jesus Christ, right? He's the oldest son. Who's the firstborn. And so when we see in a physical family that God has followed that model, he has followed that model to teach us the fact that Jesus Christ is going to have a double portion. Is that unfair? No, none of us would say that's unfair. What we deserve is nothing. And he's going to give us half as much. If you go by that model, he's going to give us half as much as he gives Jesus Christ. So it's really an interesting thing. And we live it out in our lives and in our families. We don't really do that now. But ultimately, in the millennium, I would surmise that we will live out that law. And we will see that the oldest son will receive a double portion. Abraham was told to go out to a place which he should someday receive. That is, he wasn't going to receive it himself. Why wasn't he going to receive it himself? Because he wasn't going to live long enough to do that. He went. He obeyed God. He went out, not even knowing where he was going. That's what it says in Hebrews 11. We haven't gotten to the part where we're going to talk about Revelation and Genesis and try to tie this all together in that way. But he was looking for. He was looking for something. He already understood there was something to which he was looking. Had to do, of course, with city planning. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, living in tents. That's what it says, living in tabernacles. But we would say more commonly understood as living in tents. And with Isaac and Jacob. Jacob's name was later changed to what? Israel. He was living in tents with Isaac. Isaac was his son. Jacob was his grandson. The heirs with him of the same promise. Four. Here's the reason why he did it, it says in verse 10. That word for tells us to look at the reason why he did this. The reason why he did it is he looked for a city which has foundations. Kind of interesting. Maybe we can think about that a little bit in a minute. Whose builder and maker is God. Foundations pops up again when we get over to the book of Revelation looking at this city. What do we want to do in this sermon is to look at some of the features and planning of the city of God, because the city of God has planning. God is, we might say, of all, the master city planner. And so he's planned a city, and he's taken thousands of years to plan that city and to start to bring it about. And it's going to come about at the end of this age. That city is the city of New Jerusalem. And it has some planning involved in it. I'm going to point out to you four points from the book of Revelation, Revelation chapter 21. 4 points. This is an abbreviated description of that city. Not going to try and deliver to you all of the features of that city. We would spend the whole sermon time looking at the things that the Bible tells us about that city, and we'd never get anywhere else in the sermon. But I'm going to point out at least 4 things that Revelation 21 tells us about that city and how they relate maybe to the planning of that city. Revelation 21 and verse 1. This is kind of a very interesting thing. This city does not have anything to do with the age in which we live. I saw a new heaven and a new earth. Can you imagine a new heaven and a new earth? Can you imagine this heaven and this earth completely disappearing, gone, no longer there? A new heaven and a new earth. How do we understand that? I don't know how we can understand that. We know it's new. That's all. That's about all we can say about it. It's going to be new, and it's, I assume by being new, it's going to be different. Is it going to be a physical earth like this? It doesn't tell us. Going to be a physical heavens like we have now? Doesn't say. But it says the first heaven and the first earth disappeared. Woof, they're gone. So everything that we see physically around us is going to be gone. And there was no more sea. That's one thing it tells us about this new heavens and new earth. There's not going to be oceans the way we have now. no more sea. And with this new heaven and new earth, something has already now transformationally happened. And this has now appeared. Whatever the new heavens and new earth are, they have appeared. Verse 2, I, John, saw the holy city. Then in the backdrop of the new heavens and the new earth comes this holy city. Talking about city planning here, something God has planned and has been bringing about for pretty much 6,000 years. It's going to go another 1,000 years before this new city, the holy city of New Jerusalem, comes down from heaven. I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride, adorned for her husband. I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men. That is to say, the residence of God. God is no longer going to be off somewhere in an area where we can't visually see or know or communicate and get Him to communicate back with us. He's now coming right down to wherever, whatever this new heavens and new earth are, and this city of New Jerusalem coming down. Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men. He will dwell with them. They shall be His people. And God Himself shall be with them and be their God. Verse 4, God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. There shall be no more death, neither sorrow, no crying, neither shall there be any more pain. The former things are passed away. Carol and Jim to realize that, you know, at this particular time. But there's going to be, that's the first thing about, we're going to look here at Revelation 21. There's going to be this new heavens and new earth. And the city of New Jerusalem will not appear, but it will appear when the new heavens and the new earth come to pass. Second thing I'd like to point out is it's not a physical city as we would think of the city. We can go out of the building here and there are streets of concrete and buildings everywhere. We go down into a business area, and we will see commercial businesses there, buying and selling, and all kinds of things going on in the city. It's physical. This is not a physical city. This city of New Jerusalem is really quite different. It's obvious it's not a physical city. What makes it so obvious that it isn't a physical city? How do I know that? How can we say that? Back to verse 2, it says, I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven as a bride, adorned for her husband. Now that calls to mind the fact that there is a wedding and a wedding supper and all of these things, and who is going to marry the church? Jesus Christ is going to marry the church. And it's obviously not a physical marriage, is it? And yet, the Bible uses that language for a confirmed partnership, which is going to be eternal. And this city coming down from God out of heaven is being said is going to, it is going to be prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. So we would assume this must be an allegorical city, not a physical city. Verse 14, if we drop down and look at verse 14, the wall of the city, 12 foundations. It's kind of poignant, isn't it? We talked about numbers last night while we were sitting around the table. You know, what are, I think the question was, what are God's favorite numbers? And we came up with the number 3, the number 7. We talked about the number 40. So we were talking about different numbers and how those numbers appear in the plan of God. Here is this city, 12 foundations. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? Well, why would it have 12 foundations? Goes on to make this explanation. In them, the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. Who were the 12 apostles? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Andrew, Peter, Thomas, Bartholomew. These names, there's 12 foundations in this city. And if you read the description of the size of the city, if we put that together, it would extend probably from New York all the way to, where did you go to the feast? St. Lucia. That's about how big this city is. And so it's a pretty big city, and it's got 12 foundations. It's four-sided. And so if you divide 12 by 4, you've got 3 foundations on each side. Pretty big foundations. In them, the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. Now, why would we say this? There are foundations like that. These are the kind of like the pillars on which the whole city rests. Now, Bryant works for a dental company called Laylor, L-A-L-O-R, Dental Foundation. Some of you have been there and submitted yourself to his merciful dental care. Well, Laylor has been very happy with Bryant's work for some time, and they have talked about building a building in this area where they could take advantage of Bryant to expand their operation. They seem to want to have more and more dental offices. And so they bought a building, two and a half miles from our house, and they started to put up a new structure on that building. And the new structure for that building did not have a foundation, you know, and Bryant called me and asked me to go down and look at it and see if they had see if what they were doing was appropriate. He suspected it wasn't. Went down there and looked, and sure enough, they're putting up maybe $1 million building and had no foundation. You know, reminded me a bit of the scriptures in Matthew, where Christ says somebody built a building on sand, and the winds came, the rains came, and the winds came, and the building fell, and great was the fall of it. You see, God has planned a city, and the whole city is got these foundations on it, and it's an allegorical city, but the foundations have got to be the strongest part of the building, don't they? They must be the strongest part of the building. So what we're looking at here is foundations, which are the strength, spiritual strength of God's church. They have written, these foundations have written on them the names of the apostles. And so, pretty important names. But also pretty interesting because there are 12 of them. And if you go back and read in Matthew, you'll find that Christ told the apostles that they would, each one of them would rule over one of the tribes of Israel. So that's something to note. It's first of all, it's a new heavens and new earth, and then it's allegorical. Then we see the foundations that are there. Then there are gates. Now we think about gates. How did we get in the building today? We came through a door. It's interesting that there are exactly 12 gates in this city. You have to travel. If you missed out on the gate that you were supposed to pull into, you'd have a long ways to go to get to the next one, wouldn't you? There's only three on the side, on a side between here and St. Lucia. So if you're walking, it might have been something like the distance that Betsy walked this summer to get to the next gate. It doesn't say, I didn't catch it, I don't think it does, what the size of the gates are. But in Revelation, pair of 21s here, 21:21, the 12 gates, this allegorical city, if we understand that this is really God's church being talked about, and I don't think we can see it any other way. It's got 12 entry ports into it. The 12 gates were 12 pearls. Every several gate was of one pearl. So, must have been, I remember Ozzie Engelbart saying, he liked to see the oyster from which that pearl came. Must have been a big oyster. But the gate was constructed of a pearl. Each of the gates, 12 pearls on the sides of the gate. 12 gates were 12 pearls. Every several gate was of one pearl, and had a wall great and high, and had 12 gates, at the gates 12 angels, and the names written. So here we, foundations had the names of what written on them? The 12 foundations had the 12 names of the apostles. So those are the foundations of the whole city. And if you want to enter this city, you've got to do it through one of the gates. And the gates, each one of those gates has a name of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. Names written thereon, which are the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. So those are four points that we can look at here in Revelation. We can't look at many other points that are there in Revelation chapter 21, but those are especially the foundations, what it rests on, have the names of the apostles, and the entry points have the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. Given that, here in the book of Revelation, let's go look a little bit back at the book of Genesis. We talked about the 12, last night, we talked about the 12 sons of Israel. But let's start even a little bit before that. City planners, this is the sort of one of the earliest points of God planning this city. He's the builder and maker of this city. But here is some of the planning going on, which is going to be thousands of years before anything is actually developed in that way. The earliest planning involved Abraham and Sarah. Now, we read about them. They already understood, it's quite apparent, that they, from Hebrews chapter 11, they understood there was going to be a city. They understood the city, the maker and the builder of that city was God, and they, by faith, believed that that city was going to come to pass. They obeyed God because of that. So they were the beginning. God came to them and told them to get up and go out to a place where He would show them. He had not told them anything about where they were going, at least as far as we can tell from the Bible. I think it even specifically says He didn't tell them. Did not tell them that they were going to go to some particular place. He said, get up and go and I'll show you. After you've left. Now that's takes a pretty good bit of obedience and faith, doesn't it? To say, get up, get out of here, I'm going to show you where to go after you're on the road. Maybe I'll wait till you've gone 1,000 miles before I show you anything. Just get up and get going. They did. That's the record that we have in the Bible of Abraham and Sarah, is they obeyed God, and they went. And God had subsequently gave them promises which have been passed down to you and me. The promises that you have, the inheritance that you have, and we said Christ gets the double portion, and we get half as much as He did. And that relates to, first of all, to the obedience of Abraham. Who came after Abraham and Sarah? Who got the promises after Abraham and Sarah? Can you tell me? No, it's one before Jacob. Isaac. Mrs. Lindsay had the answer to that. Isaac, and who was Isaac's wife? Rebecca. So from one of Abraham's sons was Isaac, and the promises went to Isaac. And Isaac's wife was Rebekah. There's a lot there to read, know, and understand. we won't get into that now. And then who came after Isaac and Rebekah? Jacob. And Jacob had four wives. We'll read about those four wives. Genesis chapter 25 and verse 26. It's a record, it's a scripture that tells about the birth of Jacob. We talked about the name Jacob last night. the name Jacob means what? Mm-hmm. He had his name changed. Mason's got it right. Thief. Jacob, when he was born, before he had done anything, he was named Jacob, which had to, it was a prophetic name. It meant that he was going to steal his birthright from his brother. And so he did. And his name ended up being changed. We'll read a little bit about that here in a minute. But Genesis chapter 25 and verse 26, at the time that they were being born, it says, after that came his brother out, after the birth of Esau. Esau was the firstborn. Who gets the birthright? The firstborn. But Esau was the firstborn. But Jacob here took hold of, his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and it was understood that he was going to replace Esau in the birthright. His name was called Jacob. They were twin brothers. They were born the same day. His name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when they were born. But his name was going to be changed. Genesis chapter 32. Let's read a little bit about that. Years have gone by. Jacob is now a man. He's married, and he's got a family. And he's left for a different land. Genesis chapter 32 and verse 22. He rose up that night, took his two wives, his two women servants, and his 11 sons. He had 11 sons by that time. Passed over the ford Jabbok. He took them and sent them over the brook and sent over that he had. Jacob was left alone, and he wrestled that night with a man. Wrestled him until the breaking of day. It was a wrestling match. But he wasn't able. Nobody was able to win this wrestling match. And this individual he was wrestling with was Jesus Christ, who had manifested himself as a man. He turned himself into a physical man and wrestled with Jacob. And when Christ saw that he wasn't going to win, but it was time he needed to go, he touched, it says, the hollow of his thigh. And Jacob's thigh was out of joint. Now, can you imagine the pain that he would have been in when this man who had spirit power could just touch the hollow of his thigh and put his hip out of joint? That's what he did. A tremendous pain. And he thought maybe that Jacob would let him go when he did that. But Jacob was a very stubborn man. And in spite of all the pain that he was experiencing, he did not let this spirit being go. And the spirit being said, "Let me go, for the day is breaking." Jacob said, "I will not let you go until you bless me." Here's the blessing. It's a name change. And the name change also meant he was now a different individual. Christ asked Jacob, he said, "What is your name?" Jacob answered and said, "Jacob." Christ said to him, "Not anymore. No longer is your name going to be Jacob, but Israel. I'm changing your name from Jacob to Israel." There are a few cases where names are changed in the Bible. Can you think of another name change? One of the ones that's really, really most profound? Did Satan have a name change? Satan's name originally was Lucifer. What does Lucifer mean? Bringer of light. And Satan was supposed to be, apparently, we would understand from that name, one who brought light. And if we would look at the purpose of God and bringing mankind into his family, if he was to bring light, who was the light he was to bring? Jesus Christ is the light of the world. But he didn't do it. So his name was changed from Lucifer, bringer of light, to Satan, which means enemy. Was no longer the bringer of light, rather he was the enemy. Here, Jacob is no longer Jacob, but now he is Israel. He said, "Your name shall be called no more Jacob, but your name is going to be called Israel. For as a prince have you power with God and with men, and have prevailed." Jacob asked him and said, "Tell me your name." And he said, "Why do you ask after my name?" And he blessed him there. He didn't give him his name, as far as we can tell here. Jacob called the name of the place Peniel. "I have seen God face to face. My life is preserved." And he passed over Peniel, and the sun rose upon him. And he, it says, halted on his thigh. That is to say, he limped on his leg all the rest of the days of his life. It was a sign God left him with as a result of that wrestling match, and as a result of the name change, and as a result of the blessing that he gave him. And so, let's go on and look a little bit more. We won't go to scriptures. So, well, we will a little bit. But who were the wives of Jacob or Israel? Leah and Rachel, but there were two other women as well. Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, and Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid. And so they had these, there were these four women who were mothers, each one of them mothers of some of the 12 sons. I think this is important. If we're going to be like Abraham and look for this city whose founder and maker is God, we ought to know all of this, because if we're looking for that in the same way, with the same intensity that Abraham had, if it's our goal, our objective in life, this ought to be second nature to us. And we look in the book of Revelation, and we see this is not just something from Genesis. What does Genesis mean? Book of origins. It's the beginning of the city that God is building, and he builds it around these 12 individuals. So it's pretty important to maybe know who they are, be able to name them, boom, 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 have something about their nativity fixed in our mind, to know that it is only through these 12 sons that we can enter the city. God has made 12 gates. Ultimately, everybody will become associated. And talks about all of the people of the earth are going to enter that city. But they'll do it through one of these sons. Leah had, first of all, 4 sons. You find this in Genesis chapter 30. Reuben was the firstborn son. After Reuben, Simeon, then Levi, then Judah. After those 4 were born, Rachel Rachel's maid, Bilhah, had 2 sons, Dan and Naphtali. Then Leah had 2 more sons, making 6, Gad and Asher. Leah's handmaid, Zilpah, had Gad and Asher. Leah herself then had Issachar, Zebulun, and Dinah. You can read all of this in chapter 30 of Genesis. Following that, Rachel had 2 sons herself, Joseph and Benjamin. Fast forward 400 years later. Had God forgotten what he had done? I mean, we look all the way out there, like thousands of years to the end of the book of Revelation. He's still building his city around these 12 names, these 12 sons who were born to Jacob, Israel, descendants of Isaac and Abraham, Rebekah and Sarah. They have gone down into Egypt, and they stayed in Egypt, I think, 430 years. After the 430 years in Egypt, they came out, and they started to wander in the wilderness. And how long did they wander in the wilderness? 40 years. When they were wandering in the wilderness, they were given specific instructions about building, about setting up their encampment. They would travel for some distance. I don't know what the reasons were that they would pick up and move and then relocate. They had animals. Animals had to graze. They needed grass. Maybe they moved from place to place and time to time because they needed to find new grazing lands. And the animals could graze. Maybe it would be because water shortage came. But for whatever reasons, they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. That's kind of boring, maybe we'd say. Wandering in the wilderness, stopping and grazing and feeding the animals and moving because you needed to move for one physical reason or another, 40 years. But whenever they moved to a new location, they had very specific instructions about how they were to set up this camp. And it is a model of what the city of New Jerusalem was going to be like. The encampment was a model of that city. We see that in Numbers chapter 1, verse 53 and 54, and pretty much all of Numbers chapter 2, how the encampment of Israel was to be set up. The Levites, in verse 53, the Levites had to do what? They had to set up the main tabernacle, which was the worship center. When they came to an encampment, then they had to set up that worship center, and everybody else then would locate around that worship center. And that point where the tabernacle was set up was the center of the area. The Levites shall pitch around about the tabernacle of the testimony. When they had the tabernacle set up, they were to put their own personal family tents right around that tabernacle, that there be no wrath upon the congregation of the children of Israel. The Levites shall keep charge of the tabernacle of testimony. That was their job. And that was to be set up. And it says then, verse 54, children of Israel did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. Chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, instructions about where it begins to give instructions about where each one of the tribes were to locate themselves. East. Who was to be located on the east side of where the tabernacle was set up? The Jews and Issachar and Zebulun. So down the east side, three tribes. It's kind of interesting because this was to be in a square, as the city of New Jerusalem is described, three tribes on each one of the four sides. East side, the head tribe, was to be the Jews. And if you look at how, as far as we can discern it, determine it today, the tribes are kind of located in this way in Europe. Kind of interesting. Kind of set up and organized in this way. On the east side, the Jews, who now have, a lot of them have left, but at one point they were heavily dominant on the east side. Brian was talking about how many of the Jews died in the pogroms. Those persecutions in the Ukraine and in Russia and in the other areas of Eastern Europe. But Issachar as well. Issachar is the progenitor of what peoples today? Hungary, Estonia, and Finland. They're kind of on the eastern side of Europe there. To the south, who was to be located, who was the head tribe on the south? Reuben. And then who were the other tribes to the south? Issachar and Zebulun. Simeon and Gad. Issachar and Zebulun were the ones to the east. Simeon and Gad to the south. To the west, Ephraim. Britain is Britain to the west. Manasseh. Is Manasseh to the west? Well west, isn't it? And Benjamin. To the north, Dan, Asher, Naphtali. In a sense, to a greater or lesser degree, the location of the tribes are kind of put together in the way the city of New Jerusalem is described in the book of Revelation. Today's city planners and city planning and the university degrees and so on today, it might be of some value in this present world, but more than anything else, it's kind of like what happened in Atlanta and Griffin. God is the real builder and maker of the future city. And his building and making of that city is going to be unlike the Laylor Dental Creek building. It's going to have foundations. And it's going to have very strong foundations. As it says there also in Matthew, where the winds blow and the rain comes, and it stands strong. So what we should do is we should follow the example of Abraham. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8. By faith Abraham, when he was called to go out on the place he would receive as an inheritance, obeyed, went out, without knowing where he went. He didn't know where God was sending him. God said, go, and he went. And then he asked, where am I going? Abraham, by faith, sojourned, it says, or waited in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. He looked for a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. We need to know the plans that God has and to look for that city as Abraham did. It is a matter of faith.